Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Deb Pierce.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
To the Windy City Queercast, show number 598. I'm Amy Matheny.
598. Oh, I'm Deb Pierce.
Woohoo! We're rounding the corner to 600, my lady. Can you believe that?
Holy moly. You don't look a day over 597.
It's true. I really don't. I really don't sound a day over 590. So
no,
it's pretty amazing. Wow, I cannot believe we are in November and 2014 is fast to becoming a year we have to look back on and remember, which is just crazy that time flies. I don't know. It's been, this 2014 has been a very big year. And I'm so glad to have you on again, Deb, 2 weeks in a row. What a gift.
Happy to be here and part of the team.
You are. So today's show, and we're not going to talk a lot here on the front end before I go to the news, because today's show, I was saying to somebody the other day, today's show's on parenting. I want to finish that thought. And I was saying to someone the other day that I'm close looking like I'm 600. Very close.
I was just going to say, I may have to take that. You may be close to 599.
Take your compliment back. It's okay.
Yeah.
today's show is on parenting and as LGBT people, how we parent and the choices we make and the challenges and the rewards. And it's great to have our good friend Deb Pierce, who is walking this journey, be with us and talk about that. But I was saying to someone the other day, you know, that I have been seeing someone who has kids, and it's the first time I've had young people in my life since I was a camp counselor, really. I mean, my family doesn't have a lot of young people in it. But once you have children in your life, you really are aware of the passage of time in a very different way than you are when you don't have kids in your life. Because you can see change so quickly. So for me, I can go, 2014, whatever. It's been like 2013. And then you have a young person and you see the, vastly exponential change and growth. And you think, well, we have to still be having this just in different ways as adults, I hope, if we are conscious and engaged in the world and working to grow and evolve. So as we look and go, wow, it's already November. Like we're in the last, days of 2014. When you look back on January and being a parent, you must go, oh my gosh, so much has happened in those 10 months, to Jack.
As a toddler, development is gauged by days, weeks, and months.
Yeah.
you know, where we, you and I, will look back on, you know, Christmas pictures and be like, oh God, what was I thinking with my hair last year? I look back on Christmas pictures and Halloween pictures and thinking, oh my God, like, he was, you know, he was half that weight last year. He was about a foot and a half high, and now he's, like, talking and walking, and he gets, you know, we talked about Halloween on the last show. He gets the Halloween thing, or he gets the Santa thing, or, you know, you're right about that. And I actually, it's a very interesting perspective, because I've not really thought of it like that, but every day there's something new. Jack is seeing something new every single day of his life that I've seen my whole life, or, you know, and so time is so relative, and there's, you know, so not enough of it. You know, as a working mom, I see him for an hour and a half in the morning and 2.5 hours at night because he's in daycare. But yeah, it's just change and transitions and growth and new and learning is so amazing. And it really forces you to, you know, to play and to appreciate it, which I already thought I did.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, it does, it changes when you're with somebody who sees life through a really beautiful, non-judgy lens. It's lovely.
Well, and the other thing, you know, that I have been really experiencing myself, you know, in talking about the passage of time, and I think it's too just this time of year, right? The fall and things are dying and things, leaves are changing, and there's this really, we're getting ready to go to sleep, right? We're getting ready to go to like a quieter, more still place is how I think of winter. And it's to me, we go inward, right? And, you know, the other thing that's happening, because I am over 40, is that, you know, death is starting to happen as well, you know, around me and around a lot of people that I know. And there's been a lot of grief in Chicago artistic community and in my personal life and with friends. And it's just really, really interesting, too, that that also becomes this awareness of the passage of time and just kind of really living like precious, precious moments. And I don't mean those freaky little dolls. I mean, do you remember the Precious Moment dolls? They were very big in the South. But the with the big eyes. But the
thank you for just, that. That sounds horrifying.
Look it up. And Di, do not use a Precious Moments picture in our show.
Too late. It's gonna be there.
But you know, it does. It just makes friendships more precious, and it's kind of nice that we're going into this season where we you know, the Canadians have already given thanks, but we, since we usually follow the Canadians in most things, we are getting ready to give thanks this month and have a time of reflection and thanksgiving and gratitude, and then moving into the holidays, which we should be doing all of that, and then it gets mired in a lot of complicated other stuff. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that in shows ahead. But anyhow, I'm just aware that the passage of time, you know, really marked by new life and life leaving. I've been so starkly aware because of having children in my world that, you know, every day is really important. Every day something happens or can happen or you can witness or bear witness to. And it's a good way to live your life.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the growth physically, growth mentally, growth emotionally, all that stuff, we kind of get to a place when we're 21, 22, and we're like physically, mentally, you know, guys, frontal lobes are closed. Like there's all this stuff where development is just kind of done physically, and then we just kind of work on ourselves. But you know, to be open to change, transition, and just a general openness is wonderful, and it's an absolute necessity when you're a parent, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to talk about parenting with Deb Pierce on the Queercast today, but right now there's so much still going on in the LGBT news. Theater community is still heating up. New holiday shows are around the corner, but last opportunities to see some great shows this fall here in the Chicago theater scene. We'll be back with Deb Pierce talking about parenting.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
At the 18th annual HRC National Dinner, Sir Elton John and husband David Furnish announced that the Elton John AIDS Foundation has awarded a $300,000 grant to increase awareness of HIV prevention, treatment, and care among LGBT people, with a specific focus on young gay and bisexual men, as well as transgender women. At the sold-out event, which featured remarks by Bill Clinton and a special performance by Jennifer Hudson, John and Furnish were awarded HRC's National Equality Award for their leadership of the Elton John AIDS Foundation.
U.S. District Judge Juan Perez Jimenez has dismissed a challenge to Puerto Rico's law limiting marriage to one man and one woman. The decision heightens anticipation of what other judges considering same-sex marriage cases may do. Appointed by President Carter, Perez Jimenez is the first Democrat-appointed judge to rule against same-sex marriage since U.S. v. Windsor.
In Chicago, a lesbian couple was killed in a Northwest Side fire. Samantha Welch, age 28, and Celia Cruz Reyes, age 22, were both pronounced dead at the scene. The apartment had no smoke detectors. The police department's bomb and arson unit is investigating.
A Chicago man is accused of not disclosing to his partner that he had HIV, though he knew he was infected. Anthony Halam was charged with criminal transmission of HIV. He allegedly did not use a condom with his partner and repeatedly denied that he was infected. He was arrested October 23rd.
A U.S. Navy veteran can be buried with the ashes of her late spouse in a Southwest Idaho military cemetery after the state legalized same-sex marriage. Madeline Lee Taylor, age 74, was previously denied permission to have her ashes interred with Gene Mixner because of Idaho's ban on same-sex marriage. The state owns and operates the cemetery. Same-sex marriage became legal in the state on October 15th.
Even though same-sex marriage is law now in North Carolina, some magistrates are refusing to perform gay marriages, citing religious beliefs. For example, one of Swain County's magistrates, Gilbert Breedlove, is resigning rather than marrying gay couples, despite the state memo telling magistrates to follow their oaths of office or face suspension or dismissal. Breedlove says same-sex marriage not only violates his religion, but he says the federal mandate violates the U.S. Constitution.
North Carolina's capital city of Raleigh has become the seventh statewide to protect transgender workers from employment discrimination after city council members unanimously post the revised policy. The policy already protects workers on the basis of sexual orientation. Raleigh follows six other North Carolina cities with protections.
Lambda Legal filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of Passion Star, a transgender woman currently in the custody of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, saying officials have displayed deliberate indifference to threats of sexual assault and violence against Star in the male facilities. In the six male facilities where she has been housed, Star reportedly has been raped, forced to submit to undesired sexual acts to escape violence, and threatened with sexual assault.
Two federal cases challenging South Carolina's same-sex marriage ban have inched forward. Colleen Condon and Nichols Bleckley, the first to apply for a same-sex marriage license in Charleston County, asked U.S. District Judge Richard Gergel to issue a preliminary injunction preventing any state official from enforcing the state's constitutional ban. In a second case, Highway Patrol Trooper Catherine Braddox and U.S. Air Force retiree Tracy Goodwin want South Carolina to recognize their marriage. They were wed in Washington, D.C.
In Arizona, students at Willow Canyon High School are banding together behind a lesbian couple who has been denied the chance to be nominated as homecoming queen and queen. Supporters of the couple say any ballots nominating the couple for homecoming royalty were discounted in a recent poll of students. The Dysart Unified School District said the high school's homecoming traditions have been in place for years and that they work with students on planning for these events.
A Methodist pastor who was disciplined after he officiated at the wedding of his gay son will be allowed to remain an ordained minister. The Judicial Council of the nation's second largest Protestant denomination ruled that a Pennsylvania church jury was wrong to defrock Frank Scheffer last year after he would not promise never to perform another same-sex wedding.
In world news, LGBTI Liberians have gone into hiding after church leaders said Ebola was a punishment from God for homosexuality. LGBTI people in the capital of Monrovia have been harassed, beaten, and a few have had their cars smashed. Liberia is the country worst hit by the current Ebola outbreak, with 4,500 infections and 2,700 deaths.
In Spain, a teenage girl was hospitalized after getting attacked with stones by her classmates because she's lesbian. She was with a gay male friend as they were walking home from school. The teens were attacked by three schoolmates.
Human Rights Watch has said that the public prosecutor of Perugia, Italy, should immediately drop charges against six gay rights activists accused of disturbing the peace because they kissed during a demonstration in March. The police conducted an identity check on the three men and three women after they held a spontaneous, uncoordinated protest against an anti-gay marriage group.
In the Philippines, prosecutors rejected a motion filed by U.S. Marine Private First Class Joseph Scott Pemberton, who sought to reduce the murder complaint filed against him to homicide, saying it would be premature to do so. The 19-year-old Marine is the suspect in killing transgender woman Jennifer Loud, who was found dead in a motel on October 11th.
In entertainment news, Neil Patrick Harris not only will host the Oscars this year, but he has partnered with NBC to develop a variety show. NBC has ordered 10 episodes, all of which will be filmed in front of a live audience and will feature comedy sketches, musical numbers, mini game shows, hidden camera pranks on celebrities, and appearances by A-list stars.
Out actor Sean Hayes, best known as Jack on Will and Grace, is engaged to his longtime partner, composer, music producer, Scott Eisenogle.
As a testament to his popularity, out British singer Sam Smith sold out New York City's Madison Square Garden in New York City and the Forum in Los Angeles in minutes, with a second show in Los Angeles added. The month-long run is additionally sold out in Atlanta, Nashville, Boston, Toronto, Detroit, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., Vancouver, and yes, Chicago.
Bette Midler is releasing It's the Girls, an album of cover songs by girl groups on November 4th. Midler, 68, is covering TLC's hit Waterfalls, as well as hits by The Supremes, Cordettes, Chiffons, Boswell Sisters, Marvelettes, Shangri-Las, and more. It's the Girls is Midler's 25th album.
New Zealand designer Sean Kelly, the 15 other contestants to win season 13 of Project Runway. Kelly, 25, won with his 10-piece winning collection, inspired by the betrayal of Caesar at Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week at New York City's Lincoln Center this fall.
L'Oreal Paris has snapped up Dame Helen Mirren, age 69, to be the latest face of its products. Mirren's new gig came on the heels of the beauty brand's recent announcements that it also hired Karlie Kloss, age 22, and Naomi Watts, age 46. However, Mirren is not the oldest spokeswoman the brand has had. That would be 76-year-old Jane Fonda.
Boulevard, which stars the late Academy Award winner Robin Williams as a man struggling to come to terms with being gay later in life, may never be shown in cinemas as it has not been picked up by a mainstream distributor. The film was shot in Nashville with a $302,000 investment from Tennessee taxpayers. The film premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival shortly after Williams committed suicide.
Elton John's going to keep performing at Caesar's Palace for four more years. The singer's million-dollar piano show features John playing a piano decorated with LED video screens.
Lesbian comic Fortune Feimster has signed on to star and co-write a new multi-camera, semi-autobiographical comedy produced by Tina Fey, Matt Hobart, and Robert Carlock. In this new series, Feimster will play a character dealing with her family in North Carolina, where she grew up.
And ABC is resurrecting Barbara Walters' 10 Most Fascinating People special. Walters will interview Neil Patrick Harris, who's hosting the next Oscar cast, as well as Chelsea Handler, Scarlett Johansson, and Oprah Winfrey. The 2014 special will air on December 14th.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Levi Kreis, and you are on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 3rd, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Jeff Talbot's award-winning new play, The Submission, is a hilarious and fierce look at race and gender. You have probably said these words in private, but Talbot lays it on the line in this new offering from Pride Films and Plays. Visit brownpapertickets.com The submission is at Apollo Studio Theater, 2450 North Lincoln Avenue.
Love House of Cards? Then check out Timeline Theater's political conspiracy thriller, Danny Casolaro Died for You. It's acclaimed as a rip-roaring, grit-your-teeth production by the Chicago Sun-Times and an urgent, cinematic, and breathlessly intense dose of thinking theater by Stage and Cinema. Now playing through December 21st, visit timelinetheater.com.
On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the smash hit rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet, now playing at the Apollo Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueercast.com.
The cats nestle close to their kittens. The lambs have laid down with the sheep. You're cozy and warm in your bed, my dear. Please go the fuck to sleep. The windows are dark in the town, child. The whales huddle down in the deep. I'll read you one very last book if you swear you'll go the fuck to sleep.
So Deb Pierce is our very good friend, our lesbian from the north in Toronto. You all have gotten to know her if you are regular listeners over the years. And imagine my surprise, because I was surprised a number of years ago when Deb shared with me that, you know, she wanted to be a mom, that she was planning on getting pregnant, that she was pregnant, that and then we talked about pregnancy here on the Queercast. And now what I get to enjoy through the beauty of social media is lovely pictures of her life with her wife and her beautiful son. And so I thought, what better way to discuss a topic that I think, you know, more and more surveys have come out. I wanted to talk to you when this big Australian survey came out about gay parenting. They now feel like they have enough, they have a better sample through time around the world to kind of gauge and hopefully debunk some of the myths of LGBT parents and how their children are impacted. So I just really wanted to talk to you. This was a lifelong decision. I mean, you've always wanted to be a mom.
Absolutely. I always wanted to parent somebody somehow, I guess mentoring youth, you know, also being a camp counselor, like you mentioned in our last show, and that kind of thing. I've always wanted to work with kids in their formative years to sort of help them, steer them, answer questions for them, be there for them. And then I always thought of myself in a bigger role as an actual parent. I didn't know that I would actually be part of the birthing process, but that's how it worked out. So yeah, I always knew that I'd be a parent somehow. Yeah.
And what were the important decisions that you go through in terms of being a lesbian couple or a gay couple? I mean, I guess, or even if you were single and wanted to have a child, what are some of those key decisions, whether it's, you know, how to get pregnant and how to protect the family, the other spouse or parent? Can you talk about some of those things?
Yeah, I would even go one step further back in something that we did that is just a mere suggestion. We would play a game with each other, my wife, well, my then girlfriend. We got married when I was knocked up. But we would play a game where I would give a scenario for something our unborn child would do. How would you handle that situation?
So that is brilliant.
Yeah, it worked out really well.
You're
and we
so
were
smart, Deb Pierce. You're just so smart.
Thanks a lot. So we would do that, and we realized that we come from very different backgrounds, my wife and I. Mm-hmm. I was very, like, I never snuck out of the house. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And whatever the absolute opposite of that is,
Yeah.
That's what my wife did.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she better not still be doing that. So we asked each other those questions, and it's really a question of moral code, and we would answer them. And when we were varied slightly, I could see where she was coming from. She could see where I was coming from, and we sort of wanted to make sure that we would always have that conversation together alone, mm-hmm. so that the divide and conquer that I learned to manipulate and perfect with my parents wasn't necessarily going to be an option for our child.
Yep.
Because consistency and ground rules were at the forefront of how we wanted to parent.
Yeah.
So that happened beforehand. But then we talked about, you know, who would maybe carry, and I was sort of in between radio gigs at the time, and I'm a year older, so we thought we might as well try this while my time is, you know, a little less. And so we just decided that I would try to do it. She's also a nursing student and all that stuff. So we just figured I was the better candidate, which is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And I understand that with a two-woman relationship. I know that that's an impossibility with gay men. And I do get frustrated for their process, for sure, for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we just decided that it would be me. So I started the awesome process of testing my insides.
Mm-hmm.
Which was not at all totally painful at times. You know, they tested sort of blood work. I answered questions about my family history, and then they tested to see if I could carry and hold and see where my hormones were and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process of that being okay, thank goodness, even though my mom has a very huge history of miscarriages, I didn't go through that at all. Mm-hmm. We started inseminating, and that we did that about 8 times. And on the 9th time, I went on one round of fertility injections into my stomach, which, thank you, was covered by my wife's benefits.
Wow.
What?
That's why we're so happy that this gay marriage is coming to the States.
Oh God. It was like, it was amazing. It was, and it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process. And then we, you know, it's really stressful, and it really will test your relationship. And it's not to say that it'll make or break you, but that level of stress is a really good test to something you probably as a couple haven't had to deal with,
mm-hmm.
Potential loss, disappointment, pain, you know, anger, frustration, all those things really fast forward and thrust you into being a really adult, highly communicative, ideally, couple, because you can't do it without that.
Well, and I think it's similar, you know, we've discussed with one of our guests, Brad Cawley, you know, who was a gay man, and he and his partner, you know, they talk about the adoption process. And I think that's a very similar process, right? I mean, it's it's the gestation, so to speak, of the two are different if you choose to adopt or if you choose to have a child biologically, I guess. But, you know, you still have to go through that process of, you know, it's still a gauntlet of questions. And I think the idea of throwing out scenarios and how you'd handle them is genius and literally doesn't apply to just gay and lesbian couples. It applies to anybody talking about
right.
having talking about having a child. So how old is your son now?
He will be 3 December 3rd.
So you've gotten through the terrible twos almost.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, you know, they're a bit of overrated, or Jack is an anomaly. I don't understand it, but he is, he will sort of explore things,
mm-hmm.
but he's still a kid that's like, I'm going to do that. Okay, mommy?
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of checks in with me,
mm-hmm.
and he's not a kid that like jumps off furniture, puts stuff in his mouth. He's just never been that guy. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, getting him dressed in the morning for daycare, he does what I affectionately call the alligator roll,
mm-hmm.
Often, but, yeah, let's hope that it's, you know, it kind of gets a little calmer, but who knows? Every day is different.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it's great to get some experience and tips and ideas from people who are a little farther down the path from you. And I would imagine that would be a really good thing, no matter where you live or who you are. Maybe you have to get that community online if you live in a small town or in a state here in the United States where there aren't as many protections. But I would think that that would be a really important part of knowing somebody whose kid is 5 or whose kid is even 10, you know, somebody who is farther down the path than you. Do you and Leanne reach out to other parents?
We don't. We actually don't. And maybe we should now that you've mentioned it. But no, we sort of kind of grow with his peers. We sort of grow and very silently judge other parents for the development of our own children, to be honest. So I know Jack's best friend, Silas, was speaking before him and like singing the alphabet song before Jack. And I'm like, damn it. Either Silas is a genius or Jack's like, well, we got to work on this. But then I realized that every kid is so different.
Yeah,
and I celebrate that about him. But no, I don't really think about what's moving forward. I just think about where he is right now in his little pack. Really,
yeah. Well, and you know, there. Do you experience ever having to? I mean, this is one place where it would be different if we had two people on the show, one from the U.S. and one from Canada. But do you ever have to clearly define who you both are to Jack, or is it very known and understood? Does anyone ever ask you, like, who's the mom, or that you have
never
to define your relationship? Never.
And
so
never.
That will be different, of course, in some small towns here in the States. You know, there's this survey that came out that was a survey done and a sample or study done in Australia. So once again, you know, there's going to be some different variables here because it's Australia and it's not the United States. You know, there are often these ideas that kids have a less than average outcome if they're missing a parent of a particular sex, if there's not one man and one woman. And obviously there have been many reports in the States, especially here, that, you know, many kids are lucky to have one parent. So whatever sex that parent is, and primarily it's female. But there is a team out of the University of Melbourne in Australia that released this survey of looking at 500 kids across Australia, across the continent. 80% of these kids had female parents, so it does show that lesbians are parenting perhaps more than males. But the findings were really, really interesting in saying that they show a higher general health and family cohesion. Yes. But, you know, to say that with emotional behavior and physical functioning, there was absolutely no difference compared to, you know, kids coming from heterosexual relationships or general population. But the social cohesion, meaning how they work socially, it comes from perhaps an equal distribution of work, because a gay couple would probably share responsibilities more than a heterosexual couple. So interesting that the male-female paradigm, you know, might not be there, where someone's the, and probably it's the mother being the primary caregiver, the father being the primary breadwinner. I would say in the States, both parents probably really work, and then the mom also has to oftentimes do more of the caregiving. You know, I mean, I think it'll be interesting, you know, to see.
That's
because
very cool data. That's very interesting. I really want to dive into that. I really want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they definitely say that the one problem facing families and, is stigma. And that is even in, you know, Australia, where they have had, LGBT political leaders and have been pretty progressive in terms of LGBT issues. But they did say that 2/3 of children with same-sex parents experience some form of stigma because of their parents' sexual orientation.
Yeah. Well, I experience it. You know, I can sort of feel it, but no one would ever have the nerve to say anything to me. because I just don't give anyone power to care. I don't give them power to have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't ever give that power over. And therefore it doesn't exist in my realm.
Can you give an example of what it looks like, what you're talking about?
If anyone were to ever say anything disparaging about the fact that my son has two moms, I just wouldn't give it any oxygen or credence. I just wouldn't allow it to impact me because if you don't, it's like homophobia.
Yeah.
If you don't, and that is homophobia, but if you don't allow the person to have an opinion or to judge you, there's no power in that.
Yeah. But do you experience things like one of the examples that the study gave is like just even the stigma of perhaps mail coming that says Mr. and Mrs. by accident or, you know, by mass mail or, you know, you said, I've already experienced that. Is it just a silence? Is it a lack of intimacy or warmth or what do you experience?
Well, I have to say that the only thing that I... When Jack meets people or they meet us and it's post-pregnancy, they will say in their terms, and very awkwardly, it's really important to them who gave birth to him for some reason. So mm-hmm. it's like, I really need to know who's got the more genetic bond to this child. Mm-hmm. Because I'll be the first to tell you, he likes it. I think he likes Leanne a little more than me for some reason, and I gave birth to him. So as far as that answer, people find it really important to know who gave birth to him. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll answer the question because that's a who's who question.
Sure.
And that's not infringing on anything, but people need to know to kind of put it somewhere in their brain somehow. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But he has mannerisms and all that stuff. He takes on that whole nature versus nurture. He takes on her stuff, my stuff. He'll say something. I'll be like, that was so you about Leanne.
Mm-hmm.
And, you just sort of learn who you're with. I don't know what people think about it at daycare. I know that there's some moms, I'm a really annoyingly happy person.
Right.
And there's a lot of moms and dads in the morning at 8:30, quarter to nine that are a little crusty. And sometimes if I allow it to filter in my insecure moments, I think, oh God, is it me? And then I realize it's probably just them. But it could be, there could be some level of, I don't know what to do with you because I don't know how you got pregnant and I don't know how this happened.
Mm-hmm.
There could be some of that. And if they just avoid me, then they never ever have to have that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also made my daycare buy books like Mommy, Mama, and Me. Heather Has Two Mommies, A Tale of Two Mummies, because I think it's really important. A direct example is Jack was sitting down at, he's moved daycares, but his first daycare, and the teacher, as you do, because everything is mommy, daddy, mommy, daddy, mommy, daddy, everything societally and in daycare, especially because you're learning what a boy and a girl is.
Mm-hmm.
Does mommy or daddy ever take you to the dentist?
Mm-hmm.
And Jack was like, kind of puzzled. And then you'll be like, I have two moms. And so Erica was like, right. And of course, in Jack's case, does mommy or mommy take you there? You know, whatever. But he didn't defend it, but he was just like, you missed me. Hi, I'm part of this sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
defensive. It was just like, yeah, I can't quite relate to the dad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it will be interesting because right now, you know, he only knows having two moms and he'll always only know having two moms. But it will be interesting when he, you know, how cognitively he will have understanding and if it will matter to him at all of the difference.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because your kids are going to be pissed at you at some point in your life or annoyed with you for many different reasons. And yours may just get to be one day like, you know, why do I have to have two moms? You know, and you know, it's kind of, you have to know that now that that's just going to be something like, why do I have to be blonde? You know, or why do you have to be blonde?
Right.
Or why do we have to live in this town? Or, you know,
right.
Really
all that
matter.
Stuff is, right.
Because they're kids. Right. And, you know, I know when, my girlfriend who has, kids, as I've said before, when, you know, she was discussing talking to the kids, and more clearly, you know, about us. And we spoke to a friend who is a psychiatrist, psychologist, I don't remember which. But, you know, he basically
said...
It is a difference. But he was basically, he basically said, you know, and her kids are older, but he was basically saying, you know, your kids are going to not like you one day for some reason, you know, when they're teenagers. And one of her kids was quick becoming a teenager, which is why we felt like we needed to be clear. I wasn't hidden, but we hadn't been uber clear, you know?
Sure.
And we didn't want it to just not be said. You know, he was like, you know, one day he may be pissed at you for, you know, you dating a woman. And the next day, you know, the next day he's going to be mad for you for how you pack his lunch or, you know, that you like gave him a hug as he was getting out of the car or, you know, whatever. Like, you can't take any of this stuff personally. It's just, you know, these kids are going to have to navigate something new. And hopefully they're entering into a culture where that isn't easier or they have more tools to navigate. Because kids are always looking for reason to have differences, right? I mean, that's...
Oh, my God, yes.
We start being chronically unique sometime around adolescence, and we never stop, honestly. You know, we always think our situation's different. It's harder for me if you only knew, you know, fill
mm-hmm,
in the blank.
For
and
me.
How
mm-hmm.
much as adults can we think of those moments? So, you know, we have to understand that kids who have LGBT parents are going to be, you know, are going to be normal kids, hopefully. And this is normal childhood thinking.
Well, one of the things that my wife has stated is because we have such a wonderful village of loving people with Jack. And I mean, he doesn't play strange. He's been thrust in strangers and friends' arms since he was born. You know, the one thing that Leanne, my wife, says is that I think it's really important that he have a really strong adult presence in his life so he can go to different people for different things.
That's
yes, it's
right.
important to have friends, and it's important to have that structure around him and hopefully somebody that will always have his back, as I've, you know, had the same best friend since I was four. But I think she has an interesting point. I haven't, you know, we haven't dove into it too much because it's just happening organically that he's got a lot of adults that are, you know, like-minded to us. But I think it's a really good point to know that if you have that adult consistency with different variances,
yeah.
that they know that their world, no matter what happens at school, until they develop those defenses or responses, that they will always know that there's a huge safe haven in their world. And I think that that's a really, you know, it's mm-hmm. a really important thing to know and fall back on and have as a nest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that having a lot of people, and this was one of the things my girlfriend said, when it was like, you know, you can talk to me about this or you can talk to lots of people, you know, about mm-hmm. this, you know, lots of
yeah.
adults. And these are the people who, you know, that know us and would be happy to talk to you, you know, and there was a lot of variety to the people, you know, of course
yeah.
they were both like, you know, you know, I mean, it's always a bigger thing for us as adults than it is for kids. Most
yeah.
of the time, you know, and,
well, cause then the wind changes directions and so does their thought process. So,
That's right. They are very,
fluid in their emotions.
That's
well,
true.
I'll tell you, it is true. Who isn't? Listen, I might be friggin' raising, I've got a toddler and I might be perimenopausal for Christ's sake.
Right, right.
Maybe not quite, but feeling like it. Is it hot in here? But the only thing that I can know right now at a 2.5, almost 3-year-old is that I need to give him comfort and love and food.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he has all those things, the other stuff is just about consistency. And he's showing signs of being such a really sweet boy, and he shows signs of remorse if he's done something to disappoint you or to hurt the dog or whatever. He learns consequence, and he gets very sad when there's a level of disappointment or please don't do that. Mm-hmm. He shows this, you know, what I'm saying is I'm not raising a sociopath, which is great. But, because he does show remorse, but it's really nice to know that, you know, he's going to be,
you know, I just really want to raise a really good man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am glad that you continue to be transparent and share your experience and let us know what that looks like to be in the middle of this process. And very interested, as you know, I think data will continue to come out. Data, as we said in our last show, of states and countries where gays and lesbians have been able to get married, we're going to see the effects, the impact, the studies. We're going to debunk myths. We're going to learn new things after we can finally look at a snapshot with enough data. And, you know, parenting is the same way. You know, we now have more and more kids who are in their 20s who have been raised by LGBT parents. And it doesn't mean that there aren't people who are 30 and 40 and 50, but we're just having more. So, right, we can get more of a sample on, you know, what the impact is, if any, which is what this first survey attempts to do. So
Deb, I like Pierce, that the survey exists. I like that the survey exists, and I resent that the survey exists.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be very interesting, but I also am like, you know, it's very interesting that people need to put it in a box of the fact that I guess heterosexual parenting, because it's the norm, is a potentially better way. So it's a very interesting watermark for me to use for parenting. So it's studies are all very cool and data is very cool. But, you know, comparing it against something else like heterosexual norms is sort of offensive to me, because there's nothing heterosexual about my parenting because I'm not.
Right. Well, so. and that's true. I think it's just more that people write about kids and parenting, and it changes so much, you know, decade to decade. It is really the great leveler. You know,
right?
It actually doesn't matter. I mean, yes, you can have more money and your lifestyle can be more elite or more privileged, and perhaps it seems easier. But it's emotionally and spiritually and psychically, and what do I do? The great leveler. Until you do it, you don't know how to do it, right?
Right.
And so I think that I think there is going to be more and more written about this, and I understand exactly what you're saying. But I also think sometimes it's important, because so many people without any data will just say things because they have an idea or they believe it to be true. And it's used as, you know, weapons against us or to create more stigma for our children. And so I do think it's important to have, you know, data that says, wow, you know, much in the way when I was growing up, it was like, well, if you were adopted, you know, the message got out very quickly, like, well, you were chosen, you know, you were so important, you were so special that we chose you, you know, that kind of data,
really
that kind of
nice
message, right? And I think for LGBT people, I think it will be it's not the exact same message, but it's like there's a conscious process, like no LGBT person. B perhaps, but no L and G person, lesbian, gay person is accidentally getting pregnant. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's
no,
conscious
no
process. So, as much as I try on a weekly basis to get pregnant,
yeah, and keep trying, because it really is
take,
fun to try.
It just doesn't take. Oh, Deb Pierce,
weekly? I don't remember that. No, just kidding.
Daily, weekly,
oh,
all the time.
Stop it.
No.
Stop.
Teasing.
Oh God.
You
know, I was thinking, I used to be, when I started on this awesome podcast, and thank you for having me on it still, I used to feel like I was like this sort of studly aficionado on what's what and what's cool in Toronto. And now I'm like, yes, my nipples chafe during breastfeeding. It's very strange for me, but I'm glad to still be part of it.
Well, but that's what I meant. Like, so many things have changed when we were talking at the beginning of the show. It's like, you know, the core things have not changed of who we are as people, but our circumstances and choices we've made, change our lives and change the conversations we're going to have. And, you know, on a show like this, it's going to be what's going on in our lives. You know, it's hard for me to have a podcast about something that's not going on in my life or to talk authentically. I can interview anybody about anything, but bringing my own self to it as a host, it's, you know, I can't pretend that I'm a 20-something intersexed urban right. girl. I'm just not, right. you know? I don't know. I've appreciated, and I know our listening audience has appreciated the journey, and that's life, you know, life. That's, yeah. that's a life well lived. Yeah. Well, everybody, it's November. So we are, coming up to, looking back on this year, the marriage equality update will continue here on the Queercast. I have an exciting interview coming up, but I'm not going to talk about it quite yet, because it may get locked in last minute. But let's just say it's with a certain celebrity that we've talked a lot about here on the show.
And excited.
I know, it's exciting. And of course, coming up into December, we'll be looking back at the year in review, which I cannot even believe. But we're only in November, so we'll be giving thanks this whole month. I am thankful and grateful for Deb Pierce. Thanks for joining me for 2 weeks.
And, I love you, Amy McKinney. I love you, too. Podcast, Queercast listeners. Thanks for being here.
They love you. They need you to come back here. We'll have to find another bar beside tea so you can have a beer the size of your head. That was one of the highlights of my career. Yeah, it was one of the highlights of my career. Have a great week, everyone, and stay safe and have some awesome November fun.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.